Welcome to the Brexit Podcast. Now, you're probably thinking this isn't the familiar baritone of Tim Hemming, and you would in fact be right. I am your younger, linguistically ambiguous, and decidedly more female host, Jennifer Han, and I'll be taking over the podcast for today. If you don't know by now, this is the show where we try to make sense of the nonsense that is Brexit, and this week our guest is Shazia Awan. Shazia is a Welsh businesswoman, campaigner, and former Conservative parliamentary candidate. She has an incredible roster of accomplishments under her belt. I mean, she was named the UK's best female Asian entrepreneur. She's also included in Management Today's 35 Under 35. And most recently, she set up Women Create, which is a social enterprise that aims to help women and young people get into employment and entrepreneurship. She's here today to talk about her experience of race hate in wake of the EU referendum, and just about race hate in our political system in general. Now, hers is a really powerful story, so I really hope you stay tuned. And as always, we would love to hear feedback and any suggestions you have for future guests. You can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on the usual suspects, you know, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast.
Hi Shazia, and welcome to the show. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on.
Thank you.
Now, I sort of want to jump right in by talking a bit about your backstory as a Conservative parliamentary candidate. And you have been very vocal about the sort of casual racism that you've faced while you were part of the party. And there's sort of people telling you that you don't look Welsh or asking you where you're really from. And I was just wondering how you feel this has affected you personally.
No political party is perfect. And I was very proudly a member of the Conservative Party for nearly 8 years, I think. And I first joined the party shortly after David Cameron became leader, because a lot of what he was talking about in terms of his vision for, a big society really appealed to me. And I think it appealed to a lot of young people at the time as well. I've been through a lot with the Conservative Party. There's been highs and lows. And I think that would be the case of anyone that chooses to put themselves out there, join a party, speak at conference, become a candidate, and, your life isn't your own sometimes. And the Conservative Party, like any other party, has its fair share of problems. From my point of view, I've had an instance in a selection that really stayed with me, where I was asked about the British Raj in a selection and my views on that. And I was asked about the National Black Policemen's Association, and that was followed up by why do you people need it. And I think with that particular association that I went to, I imagine, certainly by the way that they treated me, I was the first ethnic minority candidate to even enter that association, let alone potentially be a candidate. So I think there are a lot of issues in the Conservative Party about race, about equality, about ethnicity. But then you look at somebody, you look at a party like the Labour Party, for example, and they've got their own issues around anti-Semitism. They've got Owen Smith at the moment, who's had an array of really derogatory comments about women, very misogynistic, particularly when he said, his recent comments about Theresa May, Nicola Sturgeon, about his own wife. And I think this is a problem, not just in the Conservative Party. We've got a wider problem cross-party when it comes to ethnic minorities, people from different backgrounds, women. So I think it's something that we certainly need to look at wider about our political system.
And would you say, was that sort of your reason for moving away from the party system and more towards being an activist?
For me, I haven't joined another political party since I left the Conservative Party. And in truth, I'll probably always be a Conservative in many ways. But at the time when I left, I just didn't feel comfortable in the party anymore. It'd been, you know, a few years and things had gotten from bad to worse. Not just for me, but in terms of, you know, the inner workings of the Welsh Conservative Party. You had a fantastic Welsh secretary at the time in Cheryl Gillan. When I was heavily involved in the party, you had a superb leader of the Welsh Conservatives in Nick Ford. And when those two people weren't in those roles anymore, they were really involved in taking the party forward, real modernisers and really passionate about it. And when they weren't in the roles anymore and you had much more right-wing people come in, David Jones as Welsh secretary, who was an absolute disaster. Andrew R.T. Davis is the leader of the Welsh Conservatives, who backed the Vote Leave campaign. You know, it made it a really uncomfortable place for people like me, for women, for ethnic minorities. Certainly, I wasn't comfortable there, and I just felt there was no place for me there. And I haven't joined another political party. And a lot of my very good friends are still within the Conservative Party. I honestly can't imagine being in a political party, but I'm not going to continue to put myself in a position, certainly with the Welsh Conservatives, where I'm consistently made to feel uncomfortable and unwelcome.
I'm quite interested. You are also very vocal in discussing London's mayoral election and Zach Goldsmith's campaign in particular. I know that you've written about it before, but I'm quite curious whether you can explain again why you thought that was so divisive and harmful.
So my experience that I've shared with you of my own party selection process, where I experienced those xenophobic comments, where I experienced racist comments, that was something that happened a few years ago. And, you know, loyalty is a big thing in the Conservative Party, like any other political party. And I never had any intention of speaking out about this. I'd made senior people in the party aware of the incidents that had happened, but I never, ever had the intention of going public with this. Now, for me, what happened when I saw the literature that the Conservative Party Central Office were putting out for Zach Goldsmith, effectively against Labour, which any which the Conservatives are entitled to do, that's fine, that's their job. But they were putting it out against the Deep Khan. But it seemed they weren't tackling him as a Labour politician. They were tackling him as a Muslim man, which seemed incredibly, incredibly wrong. We were hearing false headlines, certainly from people like the Evening Standard, and we were hearing false leaflets saying that Sadiq Khan will tax your gold jewellery, and Zach Goldsmith, you know, welcomed President Modi to Britain. Now, Sadiq Khan is an accomplished human rights activist, the human rights lawyer, and the Conservative Party, over a matter of months, tried to paint him as an extremist. They tried to paint him as a radical. They tried to paint him as dangerous. I think there was one headline even saying that, would you trust this man to be mayor of London, and then putting in Sadiq Khan, which is an obviously a Muslim name. And the campaign made me so uncomfortable on so many levels. And speaking to other friends in the Conservative Party, I know a lot of people felt incredibly uncomfortable with this campaign and the way it was run, and then this ridiculous Bollywood-type video that was released by another team within the Conservative Party. The campaign went from bad to worse. It was detrimental to the equality agenda. It was detrimental to the integration agenda. And it took the Conservative Party back to the days of Enoch Powell, if not worse. And for me, I felt that I had a moral duty to speak out and talk about how ugly this campaign was, and I felt that my own experience within the Conservative Party could shed some light on this and hopefully help expose what was being done. But, you know, the Conservative Party carried on with this ugly campaign, and London is a beautifully diverse city. It's 44% Black, Asian, minority ethnic, and London voted heavily against Zach Goldsmith. It's one of the biggest defeats that they've had. And I'm so happy that London voted in that way. And hopefully that's a real lesson to the Conservative Party about negative campaigning.
Mm. And in the run-up to the EU referendum, you campaigned to remain. Can you explain to the listeners what it was that motivated you to actively get involved in this as a cause?
So I've always been involved in the political process in some way. Perhaps I'm a bit of a geek because I do love politics and that whole process. And during the referendum leading up to the you know voting day, I felt very passionately that Britain's future would be better remaining in Europe. Certainly in my lifetime, I haven't known anything different. And I wanted to be part of that, keeping that unity for the United Kingdom. And, you know, I realised all the benefits that we have being in the EU. Certainly in Wales, which is where I'm from, I'm proudly Welsh, Wales receives more EU funding than anywhere else in the United Kingdom. And that's why it was so shocking to me that 17 out of the 22 local authorities in Wales voted to leave. And certainly now when I'm in places like Bridgend, Caerphilly, Swansea, talking to people about the referendum, just, you know, in day-to-day conversation, they naively still think that they're going to get that money, and more to the point that they're entitled to it. And I find that absolutely startling. And I think that's partly the failure of the Stronger In campaign, in that we didn't get our points across in Wales well enough, strongly enough, and on the issues that matter to these people, you know, especially when we're talking about protecting your savings, protecting your jobs. A lot of the people in these deprived areas in the valleys, they don't have jobs and they certainly don't have savings. So I feel that our messaging needed a lot of work, but hindsight is a wonderful thing. What I find interesting in terms of what we're seeing now is all the promises that Vote Leave made, saying, for example, they'd be able to give them the NHS £350 million a week if we leave the EU. They've gone back on everything. And many of the high-profile individuals involved in the Vote Leave campaign have been almost like rats off a sinking ship. They're nowhere to be seen now, or if they are visible, that they're very much distancing themselves from this hateful rhetoric that they peddled.
Mm. Do you still remember where you were when you found out, or how you felt? Do you remember the moment that you maybe saw the result on the screen or anything like that?
Well, I was very much in the thick of it when it came to the EU referendum campaign. And I was actually at the South Wales Central Count. Mm. So I was with people cross-party. There were various media outlets there, from the Sky to ITN and everybody. And it was just gone 5 a.m. that the result came in and for Cardiff. And we'd had an inkling from about 2 a.m. that evening that it wasn't going our way. And it was absolutely disheartening. I've never seen a campaign like this in my life. I've never been involved in anything like this in my life, where people cross-party are putting aside their political allegiances to campaign on this one issue. So everybody was there. And that was a very interesting time to be involved in that, but also so disheartening. I remember leaving the count quite emotional. And we'd been there since 10 p.m., since the polls closed. And I got home, gone 5:30, coming up to 6 a.m. And I remember I was watching the news. David Cameron had resigned by this point. And I put out a tweet and I said, well, David Cameron is the least worst thing about the Conservative Party. We're potentially heading for the most right-wing Conservative government of all time. And you have to remember at that time, Boris Johnson was still very much in the running for PM. So that wasn't going to be a good thing as far as I was concerned, because he was so involved in this very right-wing agenda and the Vote Leave campaign. And I had a response back from a self-identifying Nazi that said, we were voted to get rid of people like you.
and carried on to say, if a pig is born in a stable, doesn't make it a horse, get out. And that, for me, was really shocking. It was Brexit day one, you know, the day after the EU referendum, and it was something that was really uncomfortable. And certainly now, with everything that's happened, we now know that that tweet was certainly a taste of things to come for people.
Yeah, I mean, even the Labour MP for Caerphilly, so your birthplace, said the only people with coloured skin in my town run takeaways. That must have been such a horrific thing to hear, both as a Welsh woman and as a woman of colour.
I think what's interesting about Wayne David, the Labour MP's comment saying that coloured people in Caerphilly run takeaways, is his lack of understanding of the dynamic of Wales, how beautifully diverse Wales is. And it makes me wonder, has he even popped his head out of his constituency to actually meet the people that live there? And it's that arrogance that I find really uncomfortable. His comments are no better than something that a UKIP assembly member would say. And I find it completely unacceptable that the Labour Party haven't held him to account. I was actually on my way up to the radio show that they were hosting in Caerphilly. BBC were doing that, and to speak on it. And I heard Wayne David's comment on the same radio show I was due to be on a matter of minutes before I was due to be on air on the outside broadcast. And I thought it was absolutely disgusting. I actually contacted Labour about this, gave them 24 hours to do something, at least try and put it to rights, but that was ignored. So I gave it to a friend of mine who's a journalist, and I said, this has happened, this is the recording, do with it what you will. I feel that the Labour Party and every mainstream political party have a duty of care to the public. If somebody had made the comments that Wayne David has made, saying that coloured people work in takeaways, and if they'd made that comment in the workplace, in a college, in a university, in the police, anywhere, there would have been some serious disciplinary action, and potentially you would have been put on leave and potentially sacked. And Wayne David is allowed to operate with no consequences, and I find that absolutely disgraceful. And I think Jeremy Corbyn and Labour still have a lot of questions to answer on that, as do Welsh Labour.
Unfortunately, this isn't an isolated incident, is it? I mean, there have been so many statistics published proving a rise in race hate and xenophobia post-referendum. And most recently, the National Police Chiefs Council reported that hate crime reached record numbers in the final week of July at, and this is incredible, 1,787 incidents in a week. That's crazy. That's 58% up from last year. And it's not like this rise in hate crime has stopped at all. At the moment, right now, incidents are still at 16% higher than last year. And I'm curious, do you think this sort of casual racism that you've experienced as part of the Conservatives and that you've critiqued in the Goldsmiths campaign, do you think this has sort of been legitimized by the referendum? Is that what people feel? Is that why it's bubbling up now, that people feel everyone agrees with me, so now I can openly say these horrible things to people?
I think that the rise in hate crime has been terrifying. I've grown up in Britain. I was born here. I'm very proud to be Welsh and British. And I've never seen anything like this growing up in my life. When I leave the house now, or when I'm going about my general day to day, I do wonder, am I going to see somebody being racially abused? Am I going to have to report something to the police today? Am I going to be exposed to this myself? And in terms of that, I do worry that the dynamic is completely different. And I think what this EU referendum has done is changed the future of a generation. So that's really disheartening for a start. Certainly when I reported one of the first incidents that happened to me. It happened on the Friday after the vote on the Thursday. And I was actually at a friend's house. And the police came over to my friend's house, and it was the Sunday. And I was reporting an incident that happened on the Friday. And my friend's 16-year-old daughter, she just turned 16, she was there. And we thought it would be a good idea for her to listen to, she's a proud British Asian, born in this country. We thought it would be a good idea for her to listen to what's been going on. Teenagers are very aware these days, and she wanted to sit in on it. So we were like, okay. And at the end of it, she said to me and the police officer, she said, oh, gosh, she said, I've got to do my A-levels here, haven't I? Because I've already, you know, been accepted into this college. But, Mum, I don't want to go to university here. And we said to her, you know, why? And she said, they don't want us here. And that's obvious. And it was really disheartening to hear that from a young person who's born here that feels completely unwelcome here now because of the result of the EU referendum. And it does make you wonder what we've done to the young people's mindset in this country. And if we did have Vote for 16, which I passionately believe we should have, then perhaps we wouldn't be in this situation that we are in now.
As your friend's daughter was saying, it's this overwhelming feeling that it's all of them don't want us here. And there's been so much discussion going on about how many of those 52% that voted leave were actually motivated more sort of by xenophobic or racist concerns. So essentially wanting to control immigration rather than sort of gaining political and economic independence from Europe. What do you think? Do you think racists are just a bit louder than the rest?
So a lot of friends of mine voted leave, and they voted leave for educated reasons that I can understand, but a lot of them now are regretting their own actions because of what they have seen it cause and the misery and the upset and the rising hate crime. And having immigration as a concern doesn't make anybody racist. It doesn't make anybody xenophobic. That is a legitimate concern to have. Now, going back to the earlier question that you asked me about the Zach Goldsmith campaign, I would say at this point that that campaign, the London mayoral campaign, ran so closely to the EU referendum campaign. It was a matter of weeks. And some of the content of that coming from the Conservative Party, where they're labelling a human rights lawyer dangerous, they're labelling him radical, that rhetoric was incredibly, incredibly damaging. That rhetoric was coming from mainstream politicians like David Cameron, Boris Johnson, Michael Gove. These aren't members of UKIP. These aren't people that we thought we couldn't trust for any reason. These are mainstream politicians that certainly I spent time with and I liked and known and respected. But for me, that all went out the window when they were trying to paint somebody who happened to be Muslim as dangerous. Now, I thought that was really insensitive. I thought that was really damaging. And having had the EU referendum and having it turn out the way that it does, I think that the London mayoral campaign can certainly be linked to what happened with the EU referendum campaign in terms of the language that was deemed acceptable to use and not use. And I think the Conservative Party certainly have to take responsibility for that. Thank goodness the people of London saw sense and voted overwhelmingly for Sadiq Khan. And from what I've seen, he's been an absolutely fantastic mayor, somebody that isn't a sort of, you know, circus buffoon type character like Boris Johnson was when he was mayor. Sadiq Khan is actually just getting his head down and getting the job done. And for everything that the Conservative Party put him through, I think people respect him even more for that, because there was not one time that he rose to that. He didn't campaign negatively. He concentrated on his key messages, which was a stronger, better London. And, you know, I look forward to seeing him deliver on that.
And you said earlier that you think that this referendum, these results, have inflicted scars on a whole generation. What, if anything, you think can be done to alleviate this racial tension that's happening at the moment?
I really don't know what can be done to alleviate the racial tension that's happening at the moment. And I don't think
any one government department, minister, or average person on the street like me was ready for the flood of hatred that we saw. Certainly in the last couple of weeks of campaigning for the EU referendum, and certainly now. One of the things that I recall, it was about 4 weeks before the referendum, and I was out and about, and I was talking to a lady who happened to be black about Stronger In, and a young man went past and called her the N-word, broad daylight, Cardiff, and that is not language that is deemed acceptable. And I urged her at the time to report it to the police, but she said, you know, didn't want to be a troublemaker. And I just thought, gosh, this is really shocking. This is not language that you hear in modern, everyday, polite society day to day. And the fact that this EU referendum has unleashed such ugly emotions in people is really telling and really damaging to the equality agenda. Certainly when my parents came over to this country in early 1970 from Uganda, following the height of Idi Amin's regime, where he got rid of the Asians from Uganda. At that time, the Asian community, Muslims, Sikhs, Hindus, all came over together to the UK, and mosques were built alongside churches and gurdwaras and temples, and people just integrated and got on with it. And there were many cross-cultural and cross-faith marriages. And now what you see is puritanical youngsters very much staying together rather than integrating. And I think that's a big problem where you've got Sikhs. You know, this isn't everybody, but a lot of people keep themselves to themselves, where Sikh youngsters don't want to be friends with other groups. Muslims are the same. Hindus are the same. And you see this a lot with younger generations now, which I never saw growing up. Certainly my friends and my social group is from all walks of life. And I think people, certainly in my generation, find it quite baffling what's happening to the younger generation as a whole. But I think a lot of people are politicising religion now. And that's something that we do need to look at, what we can do to overcome this hatred that we've got in this country at the moment. There are so many different questions that I honestly wouldn't even know where we begin.
Yeah, on that slightly depressing note, unfortunately, we'll have to say goodbye. Thank you again so much for coming on, Tazia. It's been really, really informative and really sort of, it's really riled me up, to be honest, to listen to you talk about this. I hope you've enjoyed your time on the podcast, and good luck with everything, and have a great day.
I've enjoyed it. Thanks very much, Jen.
And that's it for today. I really hope you enjoyed the show, and if you did, please do feel free to subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at brexitpodcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Pohl, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin MacLeod.